welcome everybody, noble listeners from the internet, Rack Addicts, After Hours, Season 2 maybe, but most certainly it's the 53rd episode that we're recording. That's past the anniversary. We're still going, we're still strong, and it's still a great pleasure to be broadcasting our voices across the internet to your ear holes. My name's Ben. With me today, it's my pleasure to have Pete and Telmo. Once again, distanced through the magic of cars, podcasting in our cars, in our home studio environments. They work quite well. I mean, we've done this a few times. I'm rambling. We've actually got, cleverly printed out by Pete for this episode, we've got the list of all the titles. Because we teased this last episode, we didn't end up doing it. We're going to have a bit of a retrospective, pick out some of our favourite bits that might have gone wrong, potentially things, products that we've seen now or now have come to hate. Polly D.
and the ones that we've never seen.
The ones that we've never seen, the ones that we're still waiting for, etc. Gentlemen, how are we?
I'm a bit poorly, but you know that goes with the territory, being a bit of an old fart.
But an absolute trooper, you're still here with us.
Yeah,
keeping going with the podcast.
So I'm actually sort of shielding, but it doesn't. I mean, it's cool because we're in the car, so I'm not coming in contact. I've got to have some diagnostics done sort of later in the week, and I've just been sort of lying low and catching up with the Mandalorian.
Oh, nice.
And Star Trek and nice. All the various bits and pieces on all the sort of cable or streaming services. So I've just been catching up on a lot of television.
Nice one.
So you're watching the new Star Trek stuff. Star Trek Discovery, right?
Yeah, that's Star Trek Discovery Season 3 currently at the moment.
Ooh.
Is that the one on Prime?
It's on Netflix.
Netflix, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And then obviously The Mandalorian, Star Wars is on the Disney Plus.
So which one is getting you hooked?
I don't know. I've always found Star Wars and Star Trek slightly different. I thought the Star Trek was a bit more adult, a bit more cerebral, whereas, I mean, Star Wars is really cowboys in space.
That's right. Good guys, bad guys.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Or, space western, let's say.
Yeah.
Nice one. Season 1 and 2 of The Mandalorian, does it continue at the same level into season 2? Often there can be a bit of a dip sometimes.
No, they looks like they've put their foot on the gas a bit, and actually they've expanded the whole thing, and they look like this, you know, it looks more luxurious. It looks like they spent more. I don't think they have, because they're already using some fantastic technology. I don't know if you guys have seen how they're
absolutely
actually doing it.
Maybe they're just a bit more familiar with the tools at hand.
Yes, and I mean, and maybe develop them a bit further. But there's all sorts of rumours that sort of senior or sort of top level actors from the I was going to say trilogy, but it's 9 movies are going to sort of surface, and there's all sorts of hints and things alluding to the actual movies, and it all ties in quite nicely. And they made a really good fist of it. I mean, it does come off. It looks movie quality, even though it's episodic and each episode's relatively short.
If you allow me to say, there's something that you've touched there that's quite interesting. It's about The Mandalorian and how the effects it themselves. Because they're not using, most productions aren't using green screens anymore.
No,
they're
using, I forgot what what it's called.
It's a big TV, basically, that's just representing as the background. Is that what it is?
Yes, and it actually moves with the perspective, moves with it. So you've got parallax, it moves with the camera. As the camera moves, you get parallax effect. And I don't know if they have to do too much post-production with it.
Well, one of the great things that it saves time with, if you have a green screen and you've got things like clear glasses, it's really difficult to key out the green from those when you're doing your background replacement. With this, I mean, the background's just reflecting and distorting through the glass as it normally would. So you can do, and things like hair. Hair is often a bit of a pain with green screens, especially for us low-budget people.
this solves a lot of problems, basically.
Yeah, plus the fact they get all the reflective lighting in the correct places,
exactly.
Because it's all coming off the projections.
Fantastic.
From the thing. So it's phenomenal technology. It looks very realistic.
Yeah, got to be great for the actors as well to really immerse themselves in the world.
Yes, certainly. Very impressive.
Do we know any other shows that are using it, or is it something that hopefully will catch on soon?
I'm sure it's going to be used thoroughly throughout the sort of Hollywood and elsewhere. I mean, normally these things, they're developed, you know, within sort of one studio, and then it catches on, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine Disney are going to propagate it through all sort of all their other stuff, you know, the sort of the Marvel Universe. Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff.
I'm pretty sure that any big production at the moment are using those technologies. I mean, we're talking about these two in particular, but, you know, it's a big, big world out there.
Well, it's actually still quite a new technology. The thing is, I don't think it's spread yet.
Oh, okay.
I think the Mandalorian is probably the first kind of feature to properly use it. I mean, the technology may well have been around for years before, but it hadn't been used for such a high-profile piece.
Okay.
I think that's why it's so big right now.
Interesting.
And soon it shall be jumping off, which will be pretty cool. Telmo, happy late birthday. It was your birthday.
That's right.
Hooray!
28 and strong.
And he's still going on.
Still going on. Still looking like I'm 18 or 12, depending on the perspective. It was my birthday. I've also done my toe. I've got an infection in my toe, which goes well with a birthday present for me.
Through the wars, you two.
Yeah.
You're battling on.
That's it. That's it, mate. That's it. No, it's been a busy week for me, as it normally is at this time of the year. You know, uni assignments and doing extra days at work because I need to, you know, pay bills and stuff. I'm trying to do just over Christmas time, doing some extra days and keeping up with whatever's coming out. I mean, I bought a pedal. I offered myself a pedal for my birthday.
Birthday present for yourself?
Yeah. An MXR Distortion Plus from the 90s. Pretty interesting. I mean, just your standard distortion pedal, really. Nothing too exciting. But it is cool.
That vintage sound.
Yeah,
perhaps.
That's it. It's that Randy Rhoads, Ozzy Osbourne kind of sound. Like early Ozzy Osbourne kind of sound. If you're into your early 80s hard rock.
Or anything vaguely 80s, I mean.
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah, apart from that, let me see what else happened. Not much. I mean, I had some really, really interesting whiskey last night, ooh, thanks to you. That gave me a bit of a headache this morning.
Apologies.
Up until lunchtime. Oh, God.
Approved by three generations of my family. It is,
mate,
quite a nice one.
What was the name of that whiskey again?
Highland Park Viking Honour. Well, the Viking Honour isn't specifically the one that's a favourite of the champions, but it's Highland Park in general, one of our favourites.
Absolutely nice, recommendable.
Delicious peated one. Mm.
You killed me.
Again, my apologies, sir.
Mate, you're the best. Crack on.
Let's jump into a couple of little newsworthy items before we get all retrospective, introspective, and all of the other spectives that I didn't say last episode. Mutable Instruments, everybody has been going, oh, come on, Emily, when are we going to have bloody clouds too? Obviously we don't, but we've got a stereo filter. While we're thinking of the past, I think it would have been around the previous virtual super booth, so April, March, or whatever time. I said this was going to be the year of the stereo filter, and Mutable Instruments has snuck another stereo one in at the end. There's been so many released. Pete, I totally ignored this one. Have you caught the selling points, the big features?
I've watched a bit, but I didn't really dig in too deep. I mean, superficially to look at, it kind of reminds me of the Corgasmatron for some reason.
Yeah.
And that just might be the layout.
Clothing.
And it might have no bearing on the functionality whatsoever. And obviously that isn't stereo effectively, is it? It's got two sides, the Corgasmatron, so you could run two. You could run a left and right signal through it, but they're going through different parts of the filter, whereas I assume this has got stereo in and stereo out.
Yeah, totally. I'm just looking at this. Have we got? I think we've got the two ins, and then it looks like there's going to be two outs, and then some kind of summed out there, which could be potentially interesting. It looks like we've got some features for aimed at using it as an oscillator, having constant amplitude across its range, tracks, volt per octave, of course, and you can modulate the resonance, which is kind of like modulating the phase of the self-oscillating tone, apparently. Should be cool. If there is a DivKid video up already, there probably is. That's the place to go.
There is one.
Absolutely. Well, he does definitely has some of the best demos going. That's where I always go if I want to get a hand on the stunning power of new modules, because his videos are just so well thought out and nicely made. He makes some great music, actually. He did a free YouTube album which has some absolute bangers on it.
But yeah, very thorough, his reviews on modules. But I mean, that's what he's all about.
Definitely.
And not too, I mean, I suppose the right sort of price, £299 British pounds for this one.
I think that's pretty good for a stereo filter. I mean, actually, Mutable stuff has always been pretty affordable, which has always been nice. But no, a lot of the stuff like the SSF something that I can't remember the name of, which is actually a quad filter, is, you know, 500 plus. Korgasmatron's definitely more expensive than this. So yeah, definitely a compelling argument, this one.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's because it's fabricated in Europe. I noticed the US price was substantially higher. Oh, I think it was something okay. Like $349, or it might have even been more. And I mean, the IntelliGel stuff has to be imported, so again, it's the cost, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. That comes from
Canada,
Canadian company, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, it will go like from China to them, I suppose.
Well, IntelliGel fabricate, unless they've changed. If you remember it, I Dream of Wires, they fabricate locally, not themselves, but they had a third party fabricator that they contracted the stuff out to, and it was local. Geographically local to them in Canada.
Yeah, I remember now. I've watched that Dream of Wires, and I remember that.
You watched that Dream of Wires?
Of course I did.
Good
yeah.
man.
Years ago, mate. Years ago, yeah.
It's a great one. We had a couple of summers ago, we had a bit of a ModCaf movie night, which was great. Poorly attended, disappointingly, but it was good fun. Let's have a look at this list of episodes, shall we? As we said, 52. We've done the big year of weekly episodes.
Wow, look at all these episodes.
Oh, such nostalgia. If we jump right into the beginning, the Wasp, Poly D and Osmo, as I mentioned before, the Osmo still isn't out. But Pete, you've developed somewhat of a hatred for the Poly D.
Yeah, I certainly have. I really think it's... I can understand what they were trying to do, but I just don't think they've executed it properly. I mean, I know that we're trying to bring it in at a price point, but it really doesn't work. And in several ways, that's metaphorically and physically as well, it doesn't work in a lot of cases. As I say, I have literally had to deal with piles and piles of broken ones, and quite often it's all different types of faults.
a shocking variety of exciting new ways to break synthesizers.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, the Model D itself was a good concept, that worked. The Wasp is still going
kind of strong, isn't it?
Yeah, the Wasp works.
Yeah.
Past serial number 20 numbers.
That's what I've said a few times. Sorry to be sort of about like this, but I wouldn't give the Poly D house room. It really is.
Well, if we look at episode 24, we first mentioned the Mono Poly, which incredibly similar in architecture. So it could be another absolute disaster.
Well, yeah, it's usually the same physical chassis, but I mean, it depends how faithfully they've stuck. I mean, my premise is that the Poly D is a Frankenstein. It's a concept. They thought, well, we've got this sort of Moog circuitry that we've put into the monophonic unit, and then why don't we make a polyphonic unit and put some effects and a few other bits and pieces into it, and
it just loses the magic.
Whereas the monopoly is, in theory, if they faithfully copied it or
faithfully ripped it off,
maybe it won't be so ghastly as this thing.
We shall see. Personally, it's a more interesting synth anyway, but we'll have to see.
You know, there's another thing that I don't quite think it got stuck with within the Eurorack community and the synth community is the Behringer Eurorack range.
Well, the problem is we've only just been able to get our hands on the stuff.
The thing is that we've mentioned it in episode 3. That was a year ago.
Wow, I didn't even notice that. Episode 3, and yeah, we still don't have any in the shop. I think it's in some people's hands, but it's not widespread. Yeah.
It's very hard, because we did try and acquire some a couple of months ago, and we just couldn't get there just isn't enough supply. But again, you know, at the outset, when we were, you know, the first episodes at the beginning of the year, we had no idea that we were going to be subjected to this pandemic and all the ancillary problems that have cascaded out of it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it took episode 15 so early in a small podcast's history, and then it all goes weird. Let's actually backtrack a bit to episode 10, Hearing Loss and Music Production, or versus music production, in fact. Somewhat of a fan favourite. You got quite a few good messages about your little chat about that topic, didn't you, Pete?
Yes. I mean, it was very personal to me at the time. I mean, I was quite upset as you guys got the gist of it, that I'd done some serious damage to my hearing. It has come back substantially, and I'm back to a level where I was. I mean, still got the tinnitus and so forth, which I had previous to the acoustic shock that I experienced in the nightclub.
Big old rave type show, wasn't it?
But I am noticing that how much of my hearing has gone, and a lot of that, so I can only attribute it to age. And you know, I've tried to be quite protective of my ear. I haven't subjected my ears to too many sort of ridiculously loud concerts. Yeah. I've always used ear protection when using power tools and other noisy environments. But unfortunately, you cannot challenge time. It gets you every time.
Mm. Well, it's good that you've recovered to basically the same extent, though, after that. Well, how long do you reckon it took, actually?
6 weeks, something like that. I mean, the main thing is I haven't got the acoustic aberrations that I was getting, and the echo and the sort of delays and all the weird stuff that was quite distressing. So yes, that, you know, a lot of the high end of my hearing's gone, and I struggle and I need things a bit louder. But again, I don't think that's too unusual for someone of my age. You know, you know, typically your eyesight rolls off and your hearing rolls off. It's just a natural part of aging. I mean, I haven't got to the extremities of needing hearing aids or anything like that. Although I did go and have myself fitted out for some ear protectors, some professionally made ones with
goo in your ear.
Yeah, having my ears moulded. Yeah. And they were very keen and tried to suggest I did buy some hearing aids, but they are excruciatingly expensive.
They really are. Really? I had no idea.
You know, they when you actually see, especially the really discreet ones that are supposed to be sort of almost invisible, when you see the pricing, it it makes glasses pale into insignificance. They're sort of small change compared to a hearing aids cost.
Well, even if you do, I think there's nothing wrong with that. If you can, if you know it's going to help you, then you know.
Well, I had a full hearing test, and you know they said that there was a reasonable degree of loss, but you know, hey, you know, at least I know what I'm working with.
Mm. Well, something that you could totally do at the moment is sounds that will make you sleep, isn't it?
I think you could.
Episode 12. That was a good one.
Early mention of my field recording-y type fascination. I definitely mentioned rain at the time.
Yes.
I don't think I've had any advances on such. Rain is just excellent. I do have the Loam Geophone turning up, which may well be some nice drone-y sounds to be recorded at some point. Excited for that. I was looking at episode 14. How do you work this thing? Was that the first lockdown episode when we were using, what was it, Zencaster?
Oh, God.
I don't know. Lockdown must refer to after the official UK lockdown, because we were certainly talking about in the few episodes prior to that, because it was building up.
We were in the pub kind of just getting a bit worried.
Well, there was a lot of chat, and we, because if you look back, and there is certainly, I'm sure there's a supply chain. Yeah, so prior to lockdown, episode 13, Interruption to Supply Chains, we were obviously talking about the problematic, or the problems that subsequently come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that they're actually worse than I thought they were going to be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at that stage, I was quite naive. I thought that it would be a sort of a bit like how it played out in China, where they'd locked down very hard for sort of 10 to 12 weeks, and then after it, they came out and it was all sort of normal, but it hasn't. It hasn't turned out like that at all.
Hooray for governments, everybody. Yeah. So, yeah, how do you work this thing was definitely Zencaster. A cool idea, but then, yeah, we had all those weird issues where sort of sample rates changed and pitch went weird and timing was off. It was very, very
not
odd.
Not Zen at all.
I think you'd have to have really, really good broadband. Everybody, yeah. Not just, you know, I mean, almost...
So definitely not Telmo and I now, then.
No, not at all. Hence why we're in the car.
Exactly.
Well, it saves you a headache with the old... hang on, has my light just gone? That better not be my battery going flat. I hope not. Now I can't see any of the things. We have Don't Mention the C Word, because after a few episodes of course, a lot of... COVID. musings. We had to change the subject slightly.
Well,
but
yeah, it was just the risk. Yeah, it was starting to get boring.
We had a good like 3-4 solid episodes just banging on COVID, and you know, which is normal. You know, it's like it's, we're not in 1920, but it's like, you know,
it was a major thing. It still is.
Yeah, still
episode
is.
Episode 18. Everyone has gone virtual, as we know.
Everybody.
There is one that I wanted to check in on. Episode 21. The modular gas is back. Is that Pete? That I think that must have been the episode. Were we talking about the fun sequences in that one?
Yeah, I think that was the Melodicer.
Yeah.
And the... I forgot what it's called.
The Omsonic
thing. The Omsonic thing that still isn't available.
Stochastic melody...
Stochastic rhythm generator.
Yeah, that one. And yeah, still no sign of that. Which
no,
is
nothing's changed on the website. Just says out of stock. And I've put my name down the list. I did write to him initially, the gentleman that runs the thing, and he just said, I'll let you know. And here we are. I mean, what's that? That's got to be, I don't know, what do you reckon?
Yeah, that's episode 21.
April time?
Something
possibly?
Like that.
Yeah.
Well, lockdown would have been March, and then April, May, maybe.
Yeah.
And then we're in sort of middle of December, nothing. And I mean, who knows, will it ever appear?
Who knows? He could have just been overwhelmed and thrown in the towel.
No, I mean, he's still posting things on Instagram, and there are other products, but this one just hasn't surfaced. Whether he's got, again, it's another supply chain problem. I mean, it's difficult because you don't really understand what their manufacturing, how it's set out. As I say, some people are sort of are great at getting things designed, and then they've got to sort of sub it out to subcontractors.
Yeah, of course. It could be firmware related, little bugs and all those bits and pieces.
Yeah.
After that, it all gets fairly familiar, as it's much closer to our current state of being in time and space.
Memories and stuff.
Lockdown 2.0, episode 44. Hooray! I actually want to jump back to episode 4, the best acquisitions of 2019. I was thinking about this because I knew we wanted to chat about it on the way here. I can't, because what I've done is I've just been selling things. I can't think of anything that I've bought this year that's really been, you know, super quality and
a bike
really working. The bike.
Yeah.
The bike. There we go. Yes. That was easy. Thank you. Telmo, you know me better than me. The bike has been great.
Yeah.
It was very muddy this morning. I went on a bike ride with some of the ModCaf chaps again. That was good good fun. Gravel bikes in the mud.
What about
slippery.
The Subharmonicon?
The Subharmonicon, I don't think I've enjoyed it enough because of the lack of synth feeling due to working in music retail. So I think I'll get my second wind on that at some point. But I'm not pushing it. I'm just admiring it, just visually.
Fair enough.
That's,
I mean,
that one.
It is,
I'm still glad I have it, but I don't want to sit at it when I'm not infused with music and go, actually, let's chuck this as well.
No, no,
then I have
did
nothing.
Did you get rid of that oscillator, the expensive oscillator?
Yeah. I was like, oh, no, Pete, this is great. I'm not going to chuck this. Few weeks later.
It went.
That's the modular way sometimes, isn't it?
Well, that's totally okay. I mean, we've all been into this sort of situation where we just... it happens to me with pedals, you know. I got to a stage where I just sold literally all of the pedals, and I kept like two.
The really quality pieces, though.
Yeah. I had like 10, and I reduced to like two. And for me, it was like, okay, so now I need to rethink what do I want to... like have musically, which and it's just like the imagining what you want, that's the hard part, you know. It's about, you know, visualizing. There's so many things that you can get, but are you getting the right thing? And then gas comes in, and then you start buying stuff, and you know, it's in general, it is a pain in the body.
Yeah. So the bike for me. What about you, Telmo?
Me?
Yeah.
Your
2019 top purchase or new thing that entered your life.
I think I know which one.
Well, surely it'd be a 2020. Are we talking 2020? Or are we talking
did I say 2019?
Yes. Yeah.
My bad. Yeah, I meant 2020.
2020. No, it was definitely the ukulele color bass.
Yeah. That is a cool thing.
It is really cool. I can get some really gnarly bass tones out of that. It's so cool. So cool. It is definitely like, I needed a bass in my life. And that's just fulfills. It's just perfect for the studio, and it's tiny. You can carry it around. If you don't know what it is, go and check out Jacob Collier's videos on YouTube. of him playing the calabace. You'll be surprised.
It is great. I always thought it had, obviously fretted, but it does have something of a double bass about it for some reason.
It's the rubbery strings.
Yeah. Is it just got like a piezo pickup in there or something?
Yeah.
Is that it?
It's underneath the bridge. So
it works so well.
It works so well, right? The box of sound really makes it sound like an acoustic bass, and it comes obviously with a preamp and a built-in tuner and a EQ.
Having played one myself, the rubbery floppy strings. Do you ever find it? You sort of bend the pitch sharp a little bit.
It does. Yeah, that's the only disadvantage of the thing. Yeah. It's the only downside is you really need to be aware if you are in pitch because of the rubber. It's just it creates different tension, so it will be different slightly all the time. But you know.
It is such a good sound though. The Carla U bass. What about you, Pete? What do you reckon?
Well, I've got a couple of things that are stuck out amongst all the many things that I've bought, which I'm always buying things, and they would be the Korg Wavestate.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Because that was just, and it still is, so much fun. It's just it's just a thing. There's just hours of entertainment there, and my Oculus Quest 2.
Oh, yeah, more recent, well, slightly more recent one. Yeah.
Yes, so those two things are the standout products that I bought this year that I was very pleased with both items.
What are you playing on the Quest at the moment?
I started Mysk yesterday. So
how do you spell Mysk?
M-Y-S-C?
S-K?
So I can't think.
S-C-K?
I don't think I've heard it.
Mysk was originally... It was a game that was released in, and I want to say, 1994.
Oh, isn't it not Myst? It's not Myst, is it?
Yeah, I thought it was Myst. I must be mispronouncing it. Mysk. Bear with me. I'll let you know.
So is it the first hour of the game, you're like in front of a castle and there's like a river and then you need to go through, or is it the
sea? No, you're on an island, so I'm just going to the store now. I'll get the spelling for you. And typical, where is it?
Well, I think I've played that.
I mean, as I say, the original one, it's M-Y-S-T.
S-T, Mist. Yeah, Mist. Yeah, I've played that, yeah.
Right, so the original Mist was... I want to say 1994, and you had to have a CD-ROM for it.
Yep.
So I had to run the game. I had to make this homage to lovely Slough and buy a CD-ROM. And at that stage, you needed a special adapter card to run the CD-ROM in your computer.
I remember that so well. I can't believe they're all coming back to me now, the memories.
I think the CD-ROM and the adapter cost something like £150.
They're bloody expensive.
So, and we're talking 26 years ago.
I know.
And I was able to run it. And what it was, it wasn't graphic. It was 3D in the respect to the graphics. But what it did, it just sort of moved you from one sort of place to another, like moving to almost still images, but they had sort of functionality.
Yeah.
And then sometime later, I think maybe the early 2000s, they made, it might be slightly later than that, they made a 3D version. And now they've released it, and it's exactly the same game, but it's in virtual reality. So I've gone from 26 years ago, sort of viewing it on a small 14-inch CRT low-res screen with this sort of CD-ROM, which was all very exciting. I think it was one-speed CD-ROM or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
My God.
Yeah, I know. It's just, and now I was actually in Mist yesterday.
That's pretty cool. Content of the game? What kind of
it's a bit mysterious. You're just kind of on this weird kind of islandy thing, and there's just sort of buildings, and each building sort of puzzles and things.
Yeah.
And you have to go to each element and work out the puzzle, and then that activates something else, and then you move on. So effectively, it's a puzzle game.
Yeah, it's kind of like an escape room, but you're not in a room. You see what I mean? It's like it's a game where you just, as you go, you find things, and then those things will open doors to other things, and you know, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's relatively slow paced. You can actually do it sitting down, so you can actually, it's not as frantic. Because I think I might have pulled something doing my favorite game, which is still the archery one.
Is that with the cool architecture?
Yes.
Yeah.
In Death Unchained.
Nice.
I've never played that one.
So that's quite a recent game. And as I say, I've been playing it a lot, but there's a lot of frantic activity. Mm-hmm. And I've had to sort of calm it down a bit. That's the whole bit. I mean, traditionally, video games, you're sort of relatively impassive, sitting behind a screen, and you know, your fingers might be moving sort of quite quickly, and you're sort of working the mouse or maybe a joystick or whatever, or a controller. But with the VR, you're really in there, and you really have to physically leap around, and you can work up quite a sweat. It's very physical.
I wonder if the popularity of VR has meant that the statistic for video game related injuries has increased recently.
Oh, absolutely. It has to.
There's so many of those videos on the fail compilation type things on YouTube where there's, I think mostly there was that sort of roller coaster simulator.
Yeah.
Or there's one which is kind of a climbing thing where people will either fall or they'll go down kind of the main drop of a roller coaster.
Yeah, I might have mentioned before because my my friend face planted on the fireplace in my lounge when he was playing the climb because he fell, and he really fell.
Yeah.
In real life. Yeah. And I've said this quite a few times on the podcast, once you get the really good, well-produced games that really work in VR, you have total presence and you're in there. Even if it's a cartoon world, you're in the cartoon world and you believe it. So, and if it's a horror one, you really does give you the horrors. Some of them are terrifying.
Yeah, I remember you said it didn't really need to be photorealistic or anything. It just...
No.
Something about it.
And I don't know if I mentioned before with the... I don't get it so much now because I played it a lot. I started playing The Death Unchained about 2 or 3 months ago. I was getting vertigo because of the heights. And you actually feel sort of very unnecessary and, there's a sort of sense of nervousness, in the pit of your stomach. Luckily, that's dissipated because I'm so focused on trying to improve my score. There was a period when I was doing it regularly and it was like a quick... The analogy I was giving, it's like having a quick round of golf after work. Sort of go into purgatory and sort of see off a few spectres.
Much more exciting than anything that's ever happened on a golf course. I'll confess I don't like golf. I apologise if I've offended any of our audience members now.
I can't believe you don't like golf.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Telmo.
Oh, absolutely disgraceful.
One bit that I do actually want to mention before we move on is the Bastille Castle drum. Have I mentioned? I don't think I mentioned that one yet.
The Bastille Castle.
Bastille Castle. Bastille makes some fun modular stuff, some fun desktop synths. I'm a big fan of the Castle. Tiny 3AA battery-powered modular synthesizer with the little breadboard cables. Good fun. Drone synth. I've used it live once or twice, which is hilarious because it's this tiny little thing and I just hold it and patch it. I have two of them. Anyway, they've just released the Castle Drum, which is glitchy, drummy things. It's sort of vaguely got a sequencer, but kind of not. And I want three of them. Just check it out. There's some good videos on it already, though it's not widely available. Hopefully our good friend and colleague Hansa from work may well be able to pick me up one when he goes goes home for Christmas. It's now time for us to leave the solid world that we live in and ascend to the stars for Luke's Spacey Bit. Thank you, Luke. Take us to Wardrobe or Stairwell Studios and into space.
Good evening or good morning, Rack Addicts, space enthusiasts, Chumbas and Baratnas. Welcome to our segment. It's been a very exciting week in space. So much has happened that neither you nor I have the time to discuss all of it, so I thought I would draw your attention to two of the more exciting stories in human endeavours. First up, I'm sure you've seen the video, but if you haven't, here's a spoiler alert. The Starship prototype serial number 8 flew in a test flight on the 9th of December that featured for the first time the signature belly flop maneuver. Seriously, if you haven't seen it, take a moment to head over to YouTube. I really don't mind. I'll be waiting here. Assuming you've seen it, or if you don't care, you now know that SN8 hit the deck in a ball of flames. Most would call this test a failure, but not SpaceX, of course. Call it PR, but the colloquial reports are that they are very happy with everything they managed to accomplish, including to some extent the rapid unscheduled disassembly of SN8. Just watching the footage, it's clear to see why. It's inspiring. Consider first that SN8 stood at over 165 feet tall. That's 50 meters of stainless steel rocket fuselage. The engineering challenges behind controlling a cylindrical structure like that through aerial maneuvers are incredibly complex. Starship will, in its final form, feature many of SpaceX's own Raptor engines, but SN8 used just three of the Dextrous engine builds. Each Raptor is mounted on electrically controlled gimbal systems that provide the main method of steering for the Starship. Combined with the aerodynamic fins and reaction control thrusters, Starship becomes a very, very agile steel block. So what happened, and why is it so interesting? Well, on the day of the test, the three Raptor engines of SN8 fired up, and the craft slowly ascended to 12,500 meters above the launch site. During its upward journey, the craft began shutting down engines, slowing the ascent until just one Raptor remained lit. Eventually, even that was throttled down and underwent a flameout. As a side note, the gimbals on these engines are fascinating to watch. Each rocket nozzle moves precisely into the right position to balance the craft as the direction of thrust is changed by the shutdown of a neighbouring engine. With MECO in effect, SN8 began then to pitch over, presenting the wide profile of the wing chassis to the ground, demonstrating the horizontal configuration in which future Starship flights will re-enter the atmosphere from space. The idea here is that by presenting the large horizontal profile of the craft to the oncoming atmosphere, the shockwave and plasma layer generated during re-entry are kept further away, thereby reducing the strain. This in turn means that Starship is subjected to less heat, requires less protective cladding, and can be reused and maintained more easily, and is ultimately safer. In this configuration, SN8 glided and fell exactly as it was intended, through the atmosphere back down to Earth, when at a certain altitude, the main engine was reignited. The Raptors came back to life and attempted to temper the fall and allow for Starship to initiate its powered landing cycle, as is SpaceX tradition. We know the story, however, and all did not go to plan. The plan was to fire two of the three Raptor engines, slowing the craft and gimbling up the angle of thrust to return the craft to an upward configuration before landing softly on the pad. Unfortunately, this didn't happen. One of the engines failed, shortly followed by the other, and the craft plummeted to the ground, making contact with the landing pad much faster than it was intended to do so. The issue appears to be related to the header tanks that feed the engines while the ship is horizontal. You see, while the ship is lying on its side, the fuel tanks can't drain down into the main engine because the fuel isn't covering the exit valve. It's a bit like when you try and shoot a water pistol up at an angle. To resolve this, SpaceX use a header tank system, a separate tank that feeds the engines during their critical horizontal startup moment, until the craft is righted and the main tank can serve the engines once again. Something went wrong with this system, causing one engine to flame out during the landing sequence, while the remaining engine lost thrust and began chewing through internal components, which generated the ghostly green flame. Current speculation is that some copper component from inside the remaining engine was chewed up and melted and ejected from the craft. Fiery death notwithstanding, the test was certainly impressive. They built an honest-to-goodness Thunderbird, and I absolutely love it. I'm sure that SpaceX will review the pieces of their rocket puzzle and make improvements to SN9 and all subsequent models that will prevent this from happening again. It's a shame that SN8 was destroyed, especially considering all the material that now will go to waste. Their iterative design process certainly is staggering in its speed and accomplishments, but it's not without legitimate criticism. I will just briefly mention the other exciting event from this week, but it really requires its own episode. Hayabusa 2 landed safely on Earth, and it is confirmed that the sample return container harbours material from the asteroid Ryugu, which is awesome. More on that to follow, but I just wanted to address how cool it is that the JAXA pulled off their sample return mission to the asteroid. That's it from me for now. I hope you've enjoyed the segment. Tune in next time for more space news, but for now, I'll return you to our co-hosts for the remainder of the show. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Luke, for another excellent remotely recorded space education news segment. Thank you kindly. And now we must round it off with a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation from us three. Pete, of course, with his extensive list of YouTube subscriptions. Obviously, no sign of running out for Pete. He's got plenty. He's got plenty. Now, what I might suggest, if you have Netflix and you feel like you want to chew on a bit of a longer series, but not Game of Thrones style epic, Dark is a German series, sort of sci-fi flavored. It is originally recorded in German. I hate dubs, so I urge you to watch it in German with subtitles. Much better that way. We've got a little bit of time travel, a little bit of a circular time thing, sort of mysteries, sort of kidnappy stuff. What's really cool about this series for me is, with the way it's kind of set out, there would be the potential for a lot of confusion with the different time periods, the huge numbers of characters. I think it's been done incredibly well, so it really helps the viewer not get lost when jumping around in the world. It's really easy to figure out who's who, and we're always fed questions. It's like, who's that? What's going on here? Another mystery that we must unravel. And it's really grabbed my attention, kept it very well, about halfway through season two. Dark on Netflix, if you're interested. Who's next?
I can go.
What do you got?
Well, I don't have a YouTube recommendation, but I do have an app for your phone. Recommendation.
That's a first,
isn't it?
Yeah, we haven't had an app recommendation
before.
Haven't
done apps. Well, there you go. There's a first time for everything. So even if you're an iPhone or an Android user, you can both find this app called Topline. And Topline is a multi-track recording application for your smartphone. So you can not only import audio files from Dropbox, from iCloud. Imagine your mate sends you an audio file. You just want to drop some stuff on top quickly, and you're like in the middle of the mountains with your Kali Hue bass. That's what you do. You can record up to three tracks of audio in a single project. You can, so there's sort of like a mix view as well, so you can choose how loud you want certain bits. You can organize your projects with tags, and you can add locations to where you've recorded these ideas. So the cool thing is that it's all, instead of having, you know, like different bits and bobs within your screen where this is where I recorded and you know, this is all within one app. And it was developed by Abbey Road Studios. You can sync projects as well. I think I mentioned that.
Cool. It's like a step up from just making a quick voice memo for something you've thought up when you're writing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, cool thing as well is that you can convert to actual WAV or M4A files or AIFF.
If you've got something like one of those portable guitar interface things, or even one of those Zoom microphones that plugs into a Lightning port, pretty cool.
Yeah, I think, like, to be honest, microphones, like the built-in microphones on these smartphones these days are just so much better than what they used to be. So you can get like some pretty decent sounds, even if you're just, you know, doing a regular demo or whatever. It sounds good.
Not bad at all. What was that called again?
Topline.
Topline by Abbey Road. Lovely stuff. Right, round us off, Pete. What's from the YouTubes today?
Right, this one is called Telecom Electronic Beats, and that's the spell, I assume that's the German way, so it's T-E-L-E-K-O-M. And one of the longest running YouTube channels that deals with sort of electronic music creation and DJs and all that type of ilk. 2008 they started on YouTube. So that's 12 years. So that's their sort of... they've been it for the long haul. So they deal with a lot of producers, a lot of electronic producers. They do critiques or reviews of equipment as well. And they do all sorts of... Again, it's all centred around sort of electronica, electronic music, and that ilk or those genres. And they don't go too heavily into production, but they do feature different producers in their studios, different DJs, and pieces of equipment. So generally very orientated towards the sort of things we like.
Oh, totally, yeah. I haven't actually heard of the channel, but I think one of them swung by my news feed or something, which is the Lady Starlight modular techno stuff. I think that swung past. Looks pretty cool, and obviously been doing it for so long. Excellent stuff.
Yes.
Nice one. Thank you, everybody, for listening, sticking with Rack Addicts After Hours for a whole calendar year, you beautiful people, you. We'll catch you in the next one, episode 54, in about a week on your favorite podcast absorption platform. Thank you for listening.